Test 1, 2, test.
Information Technology Committee to order, and we'll take the roll.
Chairman Weiss.
Here.
Representatives Mock.
Here.
Owens.
Here.
Striley.
Here.
Thorson. Tolman.
Here.
Senators Shibley. Burkhardt.
Here.
Marsley.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Robinson. Chief Information Officer Mike Ressler.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Okay. Next item on our agenda is the minutes from last meeting. So we have a motion. Is there a second? We have a second. All those in favor of accepting the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, pose same side. Motion's carried. Okay. We'll start out with our 905 agenda and with our MMIS. Go ahead.
Chairman Weiss and members of the Information Technology Committee, I am Jenny Witham, the Director of Information Technology Services for the Department of Human Services. I appear before you today to provide an update on the status of the Medicaid Systems Project. Xerox officials were here on September 30th, 2014, to continue contract negotiations and to determine a revised go-live date. As a result of that meeting, Xerox delivered a revised detailed work plan on October 17th, 2014. The project team met last week to review and work the plan and provide formal comments. The revised go-live recommendation is scheduled to be delivered to the Executive Steering Committee on November 13, 2014. The following table outlines project expenditures through September of 2014. Out of the $88.5 million in this budget, we have expended $60.7 million with the remaining amount of $27.7 million. If you have any questions, I can answer them at this time.
Thank you, Jenny. Is there any idea, excuse me, when that revised go-live date will be?
At this time, it's still going back and forth between Xerox and the state, Chairman Weiss, and so I would hate to speculate at this point.
Okay. Are there any other questions on MMIS? Representative Striley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, is it going to be next year, or we're going to have to delay it into 2016, or what are we talking on a revised date?
Chairman Weiss and members of the committee, right now we're hoping for a time frame next summer.
Okay. Okay, any other questions concerning MMIS? If not, Jenny, you want to give us a little update on the eligibility system as long as you're standing here?
Chairman Weiss and members of the committee, the Eligibility Modernization Systems Project, I had testified before you last time in regards to the fact that we were exploring our options for how to move forward. We did release an RFP and have received responses to the RFP. We're in the process. We have finished the evaluation. We have a couple more steps in the evaluation of the request for proposal, which would be oral presentations or a demonstration of the system, and then the final best and final offer negotiations to make sure that we have the final cost determined for that project. So that is the process that we're in at this point. And I don't know if you have any additional questions specifically on any other actions in that project.
Okay. Are there any questions? I guess we're going to let you off easy this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jenna. Okay, committee, let's move into our 9:15 agenda, higher ed. Somebody's here to present, or there's nobody, just, okay, I thought somebody was still going to show up. Okay, committee, you should have all received testimony from I believe it's Dr. Scogan, stating why they aren't able to be here today. I thought someone else was still going to show up, but I guess I was wrong. That's where we're at on that, I guess. There's nobody here to talk about any of the other breaches either. Okay, we do have someone strictly on this. Okay, well, let's move into the 9:20 agenda then. And we'll take up this one when we discuss the bill draft, so.
Chairman Wise, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Darren King, Deputy CIO for the university system. I'm here today to give you an update as requested regarding progress surrounding security. I did include, or it is posted with the agenda on the website, but I also sent around the same document for your review. I'm going to just briefly touch on each of these, and I would certainly entertain any questions after that at that point. So we have been focusing on a number of different things from a security perspective. Each of these represent efforts to continue to try to build out security controls that are appropriate in today's threat landscape. First area, desktop management. That's an area right down to the user desktops to try to make sure those devices are managed so that we understand really everything about those and that we can provide managed full disk encryption to these devices that are portable in today's world. That is well underway and for all intents and purposes completed. Enterprise vulnerability scanning. We have done vulnerability scanning for many years in the higher ed system. I think the difference is the ability to develop that system in a way where it can be more actionable by the people that can actually help deal with the vulnerabilities. And an improvement in that system has given us that ability internally in CTS, and it also will allow us to provide this as a service to campuses so that they can do campus-level vulnerability scanning at the same time using the same system. We have undertaken a security training and awareness campaign. We really think that the humans involved in information security are a large part of information security, so we are currently implementing a 12-section curriculum. So once a month, all CTS employees go online, they watch a short 5-minute type informational training video, and then have to take a little quiz afterwards, along with a newsletter that we're trying to do to raise awareness. And then right after Christmas, we're going to implement some lunch and learns too. So we're trying to just raise the awareness of information security. We're trying to keep it month to month so that we continue with, you know, I'm an old K-12 guy, so I know that, you know, you don't do it once and then walk away. You just kind of continually work with it through the process. So multi-factor authentication, that was an area that I think we felt like obviously needed to be addressed. We're in a testing phase right now with that. We're deploying that over the course of the next few months based on systems and users that we think have a higher risk than those that don't. So it'll be a graduated approach to bring multi-factor authentication into our operation. As you probably saw in the media, we did fully implement the 90-day password change process with higher ed, with faculty and staff. That is happening in the next 6 weeks. Everybody's password will expire and we'll go forward from that. Governance, a number of things happening from a governance perspective. We have an interconnect study group working right now, and really the five-sentence description of interconnect study is we want to really document and understand who owns data, who consumes data, and where is that data at rest, and how does it move, so that we can get to the point where we secure it appropriately at every phase. New data classification policy, that's a policy that had not been worked on for quite some time in higher ed. That is in draft form. We expect action on that very shortly. Again, things have changed so quickly over the course of the last 4 or 5 years that policies trying to classify data go out of usefulness quite quickly. So that is in draft form and should be implemented quite quickly. The Endpoint Task Force has been working. That's a task force made up of representatives from across the system and the campuses, specifically looking at the different things we need to do to secure endpoints. And they have a good set of goals identified, and we'll begin to work through the technical or procedural or policy solutions to address the issues that they have came up with. And we have done a number of different security audits internally. We've also are working with the state auditor's office right now on their security assessment. So that is happening. This is the final week of that. So those have been good. We think that's a critical piece as we move forward, is to really truly understand from a baseline perspective where we are. When we responded to the breach, obviously we dealt with the initial mitigation, And then we started to look for those things that were the big things and obvious things. And some of these things that we've been doing are those things that we knew were obvious, but that didn't preclude us from saying, we need to continue to study this too. So we've tried to bring in external consultants to help us. We've done internally. And then the state auditor's security audit will be quite helpful to us also. Final thing on the list, intrusion detection and prevention system. We have that in 3 out of the 4 quadrants. The last quadrant is Bismarck. That will be done on November 15th. And I think in general, we're happy with where that's at. It's like anything, when you put a system like that in place, there's going to be a certain phase where you're getting to know, you know, how this system works. There's always potential in systems like that for false positives and things like that. So ITD has been extraordinarily helpful with that. And we feel like that has been a good addition and adds one more layer to the way we secure information at higher ed. So with that, I would certainly welcome any questions or comments that the committee may have.
Thank you. The question, Representative Striley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Darren, on the desktop management, are you doing any virtual desktops now? Or?
Chairman Weiss, Representative Striley, we do some of that. As a matter of fact, a lot of our internal work works off of virtualized desktops. But as far as delivering it kind of universally as a solution, no. There are a number of cases internally where we do virtual desktops.
Are there any further? Senator Miller?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. King, have you been able to determine kind of where all this data breaching is coming from? Is that
Chairman Wise, Senator Miller, you know, if you're referring back to our breach, you know, that really hasn't changed. It's very difficult. Most of these things happen from offshore. You know, you know a geographical part of the world, perhaps, where this is coming from, but the ability to trace it down to a single person is quite almost impossible, quite difficult.
All right, thank you. I just
Are you aware, up to this point, of any of the breach caused any information to be used that you're aware of?
Chairman Weiss, members of the committee, not that I'm aware of. I have not been told that.
Okay. Senator, you have a question?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So can we narrow it down to Russia, China, or India?
Chairman Weiss, Senator Ruckard, I'm going to stay politically agnostic on that because I don't think we can. Like I said, it's quite interesting when you look at the story. And you can go out and do your own little Google search and find the data on where breaches are happening. There's some interesting real-time sites out there that show attacks in progress, and you can visually see where all these different things are happening from. We're not immune either. Some happen from inside the United States also. So,
thank you.
Any further questions from the Representative Striley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the what you're trying to do to kind of wrap the whole system in campuses and security, are you getting any pushback from any of the campuses?
Chairman Weiss, Representative Striley, I would not call significant pushback. I would call them conversations. You know, I certainly think, again, in today's world, it's hard to not notice what's happening around the world. So I certainly think the conversations are good. I think people understand that we have to have a little straighter security posture. You know, obviously, security sometimes can impinge on people's workflow, and I think they have to get their arms around that and accept that. So,
thank you. Further questions? If not, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move right into our 9:30 agenda. Who's taking that one for us?
So this is actually fitting. This is October Cybersecurity Month, so a lot of this testimony that we're hearing today is probably kind of fitting, and we're in the middle of our annual outreach campaign on campus, and so one of the big topics is clearly phishing, because this is a very common thing that happens. And so with that, I guess I'll move into my testimony here. Chairman Weiss and members of the committee, my name is Mark Wallman. I serve as Vice President for Information Technology at North Dakota State University, and I'm here today to report on the status of the security attack at NDSU related to targeting phishing emails. The incident in question resulted in 7 employees having their August 29, 2014 paychecks deposited into bank accounts that did not belong to them. I'd like to begin with some background information. First, the university system, including NDSU, uses Microsoft Office 365 for email and calendar. Office 365 is a Microsoft-hosted solution that provides email, calendar, instant messaging, and other services. ConnectND HR finance systems are hosted by the state IT department and managed by the North Dakota University System's Core Technology Services department, and as these systems are not under my direction, my comments will focus on activities at NDSU. However, I would like to say that both NDUS Core Technology Services and ITD were excellent partners in working to assess the cause and scope of this incident. In the months of August and September, a phishing attack aimed at stealing employees' paychecks was targeted at research universities in the United States. On August 12th, people at NDSU received phishing emails related to this scheme. The number of recipients known variants of the email exceeded 50. The phishing email included a website link which pointed to a site hosted by a Russian internet service provider. The internet service provider has since taken the site down. The website accurately mimicked the design of an NDSU website. The scheme was first reported to NDSU HR payroll on August 13th. On that same day, NDSU HR payroll sent an alert to NDSU employees notifying them of this scheme. On August 28th, an NDSU employee happened to notice her direct deposit information had been reset to a bank that was not hers. She contacted NDSU HR payroll, who, one, corrected this before the paycheck was sent to the bank, two, they alerted the Bank of North Dakota, and three, ran a report to ConnectND to search for other employees who had their routing and account numbers reset to this bank, and they found none. On September 2nd, another NDSU employee contacted NDSU HR payroll because his paycheck was not deposited into his bank account. NDSU HR payroll worked with Core Technology Services staff to develop a new tool to identify all NDSU employees who recently had their direct deposit information reset. 8 employees were then identified as being affected. 7 of the employees had their paychecks deposited into the bank accounts that were not theirs. The incident was reported to NDSU police, who have been working with the FBI to investigate this issue. NDSU IT security officers scanned the university-owned computers of all affected employees. No malware was discovered on any of the computers. Network traffic logs were analyzed to determine which computers and users at NDSU had connected to the phishing website. Approximately 50 people were identified as having visited the website. All were contacted and asked to change their ConnectND passwords. Network logs indicate some but not all of the people affected by the direct deposit attack visited the phishing website. Subsequent to this incident, NDSU system administrators checked our servers and applications to ensure that the attack was not the result of password harvesting from a server or system at NDSU. The checks all came back clean. None of our systems were compromised and no passwords were harvested from NDSU servers or applications. This concludes my prepared remarks, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Mark, in your second to the last paragraph here, you say some but not all.
Yep.
So how did the other ones get their passwords reset then? Get their bank routings reset?
Members of the committee, there's a similar theme you're going to hear from what Mr. King first said. It's all of the forensic information. It's not perfect. The best we're going to be able to do is speculate. I think it's most likely that they were maybe there's a phishing related thing, and we just don't have the forensic evidence for a few of the employees. We certainly know that some of them visited the website. Some of them said they didn't type in their password. Some of them did say they typed in their password. Then there's also the link connecting this particular phishing scheme to the actual removal of changing of the bank information, and there's no, we don't have forensic information on that part because that happened, once the password went to somebody. We don't have, it's on their servers, and we don't have forensic information there. So on balance, it looks like it was a phishing attack, but we don't have perfect information on that.
Any Representative Striley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark, in your statement, you say NDUS, CTS are excellent partners, but I would probably dispute that a little bit. You pulled away from email. You clearly didn't want the IPS and IDS system that was in place. What's your security philosophy being that we're trying to create a system, a unified system, yet your office and campus is the one that's fighting, at least from what I can tell in the emails and various other stuff I've read, doesn't really want to be a part of some of those systems. So what's your security philosophy in? And then to go with NDSU, I understand, is under contract with Wahpeton. That breach happened. NDSU was part of the 290,000-300,000 breach. So to me, it seems like a lack of focus or a lack of priority to security in one institution only.
Chairman Weiss, Representative Straley, members of the committee. So with regard to our overall security philosophy, and maybe I should say specifically with the intrusion detection and prevention system, we already have an intrusion detection and prevention system, and there were some technical reasons that there was some disagreement on with the university system. From my perspective, we followed an existing process. We asked for an exemption to that. It was denied, and it's over, and that it's an over and done deal. I will say that, so with regard to our security philosophy, we have a philosophy, we have a culture of security at NDSU. We have two full-time security officers. Security is a part of the job, day-to-day job of all of our engineers, and that's very clear. One of the things that we have had a long-time philosophy on is pushing the security as close to the device as possible. The attack at Target that people probably have heard about a year ago. What happened there? There's actually an article on CNN about that. Is that the attackers got through their perimeter defenses? They got into a heating and cooling system, HVAC system, and from there, there was no security between that HVAC system and the. And the system, point of sale system, that had the credit card information. So they were able to, once they kind of found a way to get in, they were able to kind of daisy chain over and get in. And so our philosophy is to push it back as far as we can to try and avoid a security situation like that. We are extremely security conscious. We take it very seriously. We have the State Auditor's Office, who had contracted with an external firm to do scanning. I'm very pleased with the results that are coming up for those for NDSU. We certainly have, I would say in general, our security philosophy is actually very similar to the university system. And a number of the things that Mr. King had talked about, we're also interested in doing and looking at. You had mentioned virtualization, and that's a good security tool. We are actually in a point where we're looking at application virtualization, which is very similar, so that we don't end up with data on devices that might be walking around and getting out in the clear. So I can talk more about that, but maybe I'll let it go and see if there's any follow-up questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To follow up on that, as far as your last comment, being that there is no clear and concise records retention policy, isn't that part of the problem? I mean, the Wahpeton one, half of that data or more probably shouldn't even been on there. On the server breach of 300,000, who knows, half of that probably shouldn't have been on there. Would the breaches have occurred? Yes, they would have still occurred. But yet you wouldn't have lost the amount of records. So isn't that, and obviously it's a policy, but isn't that a critical piece of a security posture?
Chairman Weiss, Representative Straley, members of the committee, yeah, I would agree with that. We have a 26-page record retention schedule at NDSU, and I think that you're right, though, that it's important to be sure that that's being followed everywhere. I'm not sure exactly what the status of how records retention is being managed at other campuses. We're actually out doing education on our campus right now to be sure everybody knows what our records retention rules are and follows them. And so it's important for records retention to keep stuff as long as you keep it, need to keep it, but then not keep extra copies, for example. Be sure the authoritative records are kept, and then destroy others so that you don't have data sitting around that could be compromised like this. So, one other thing, going back to Wahpeton, our intrusion detection prevention system did detect that the incident at Wahpeton, and that's kind of how it was discovered. And then we blocked, they have some of their computers on our network, and then they were blocked, and remediation began.
Any further questions? Mark? Representative Stradic.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the email piece, what's the rationale behind it? I know what you're probably going to say, the students are already on there, et cetera, but no other campuses are have that model. Why is it necessary for NDSU to do that?
Chairman Weiss, Representative Stradic, members of the committee, there actually are two other campuses that have a similar model, Minot and Valley City.
Mr. Chairman, those are getting converted in, though.
Yeah.
Since they had their own systems before.
So, and just to be clear, we're on the exact same platform. We can interoperate with the other institutions. There are a couple things that are advantageous for us. We are able to have better access to forensic tools. So in this particular phishing case, we were able to have access to some local tools that we were able to use without worrying about disrupting other campuses. And we're able to do some additional forensics in this case. We have access to e-discovery tools, which has been very helpful for us to more quickly respond to open records requests. And we are able then to integrate better with services at NDSU.
Senator Miller?
Mr. Chairman, I just have one question about, you know, we're talking a lot about personal information and things like that, but what about proprietary information that might exist in the research? Is there any risk to that information? That'd probably be worse if some of that got out into the wrong hands.
Yeah. Chairman Weiss, Senator Miller, members of the committee. we have many different types of data. Some is very open, some is very confidential. Research data is one of those. Part of the changes that we made to the email did have to do with some concerns of research partners that they wanted to be sure they knew exactly who could access some of the content. There's definitely intellectual property that's confidential. There is contracts or data that might we have access to under non-disclosure agreements with research partners. Research data that is on human subjects, so there may be medical data or some other sort of personal data. So we have lots of data in various forms that are important there. Yeah.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you. Okay, we'll move on to the next item, our 9:40 agenda. Go ahead.
Chairman Weiss, members of the committee, my name is Cloy Tabola. I'm the Chief Information Officer at North Dakota State College of Science. I appear before you today to provide an update on the data exposure incident that occurred on the campus in September. Over Labor Day weekend, NDSU's monitoring equipment detected unusual activity at our location in Fargo, and it automatically blocked those computers, as Mr. Wellman referred to earlier. NDSCS staff identified similar activities going on in Wahpeton and blocked those computers as well. The problem was initially difficult to pin down. NDSU's IT security staff assisted us, and we were finally able to identify that it was malware that was disguised as a piece of the Windows operating system. Microsoft antivirus software did not pick up on this, and it is installed on all of our computers. We immediately began the labor-intensive process of cleaning, scanning, and reconnecting the affected computers. In doing so, we ultimately identified 68 machines that had some personally identifiable information stored on them, whether that was information that the employees had actually deliberately stored or whether that was cache files that they were not aware of. When we identified the personal information issue, we immediately contacted Dr. Lisa Feldner for assistance. She enlisted the NDUS interim IT security officer and the deputy CIO to assist us. While NDSCS's IT security officer scanned, collected, and removed the personally identifiable data from the relevant computers, I worked with NDSCS's senior management team and with NDUS staff to help plan a response. We used a company called All Clear, which the university system has previously enlisted to send letters and to handle incoming calls from affected individuals. After scanning all the affected computers, we ultimately identified Social Security numbers belonging to 15,600 current and former employees and students. On October 8th, 2014, a letter was mailed to all of those individuals notifying them of the potential exposure and letting them know that All Clear would provide data protection services in the event that they had an issue as a result of this event. On October 9th, NDSCS made a public announcement regarding the malware issue, and the All Clear call center was open to handle calls from concerned individuals. As of last Saturday, we had received 125 calls. In working through this issue, we enlisted MSISAC, a computer forensics organization, to analyze the network logs and the computers affected. They could find no evidence at all that data were taken, but they could not say with complete confidence that that did not happen. In order to protect our students and employees and the institution, we felt it was best to notify our customers. In response to this issue, we have taken a number of deliberate steps to harden our IT security. First of all, we have changed all administrative passwords on all systems and changed access levels to the most limited access for each of the administrators. Malware detection software has been installed on all servers that contain any user information at all, and we are working on an interim solution for individual user computers that will carry us over until the university system CIO Council identifies a system-wide malware solution that we can implement. We also have reviewed several vendors, and we implemented a scanning and encryption solution for protecting personally identifiable information. That software has been installed in HR. Those staff are trained, and they are now using that. We've partially completed that process with the business office, and enrollment services will be next. Ultimately, once these power users of data are on board, we will start distributing that scanning software to everyone on campus so that any individual, whether they're custodian or a faculty member, will have a regular scan to see if there's any information on their computer that should be removed. Additional steps we've taken: we've installed a new host firewall to protect our servers. We're configuring a virtual private network to better manage and protect incoming connections to the campus network and to our servers. On September 27th, as has been mentioned, ITD deployed intrusion protection and prevention appliances on the NDSCS segment of the state network. Finally, the NDUS interim IT security officer will be meeting with NDSCS staff to assist us in reviewing our security and to plan improvements, and that process will begin on Monday. As a result of the L.R. Kimball survey that the university system and the state auditor's office are conducting right now, we will also be reviewing our plan to ensure that we are better protecting our data, our network, and our users. This concludes my prepared remarks. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Representative Strait.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you were notified of the malware present, have you been able to determine how long it was on there? Was it on there for months, years, days?
We could track back the presence of that software to, I believe, the middle of August, so a couple of weeks.
Senator Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, would you repeat your name? I didn't catch that.
Yes, Senator Burkhart, members of the committee. My name is Cloy, C-L-O-Y, Tobola, T-O-B-O-L-A.
Okay, I do have a question. The question I have is if 15,000 students or former students or employees, Social Security number is breached, what do they have to worry about going forward?
Senator Burkhart, Chairman Weiss, members of the committee, my own information was on that list, so I'm one of those that actually has to worry about that. And that's a very good question. At this point, we have no evidence that anything was taken, but we do advise people to be cautious with their information, to keep an eye on their credit card accounts and such things. So there's nothing we believe urgent. We have no indication, or we have not seen any accounts being hacked. We have no reports that we can directly link and say this was a result of this happening. So we haven't seen anything occurring, and as I said, we have no evidence anything was taken. In some ways, this was to protect ourselves and to be fully disclose to our customers what occurred.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions on the committee? Representative Mott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Ola, I'm
looking at the notes, was any credit monitoring service implemented for those that were affected? I apologize if I had missed that part, but I don't see anything in the notes regarding any credit monitoring for, say, 90 days or 1 year of those that were possibly affected by this breach.
Representative Mock, Chairman Weiss, members of the committee, thank you for your question. We did the All Clear system. One of the reasons we implement or we engaged them, in addition to the fact that the university system already had a contract, they provided the letters, sent the letters for us. They provided the call center, and they also for 1 year will provide credit protection. Now that's different than monitoring, but they will assist anyone that has difficulties.
Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chloe, is that? Because as you had mentioned, the university system has already contracted with All Clear. Is that in addition? So is that 1 year? Does that begin in this current timeline? So if one of those students was already receiving that service from All Clear prior to this instance, this incident, is it an additional year that tacks on to that?
Yes, beginning October 9th.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions from the committee? If not, thank you. Okay, committee. Now we'll move on to our bill draft. We have three of them, I believe. Or is it four? Four of them, I'm sorry. Okay, Adam.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, these were bill drafts that were distributed by Representative Striley at our last meeting. They are linked to the agenda, and you have copies before you. I'll just take them in numerical order, starting with the 207, I guess. 0207 is the middle number, the LC number on that one. That one is just about system-wide email for the entire university system. It would require that they all use one cohesive system. I guess pretty straightforward on that one. The 0208 bill draft is a bill draft that clarifies that the university system would be is included in the state records retention policies. The third bill draft, 0209, this bill draft relates to the university system and requires that they retain emails for 5 years. That would be emails that are related to public business. And then the fourth bill draft is just some cleanup language that clarifies that the CIO of the university system should report to the IT committee and coordinate with ITD rather than, as it was previously listed, the Commissioner of Higher Education. And those are the four bill drafts.
Okay. Wonder how we want to do this, take them all at once and have testimony on all of them, or Representative Riley, they're your drafts. You want to look at them one by one, or
it's up to you, Mr. Chairman. And should the first three pass, I think it's would be appropriate maybe to put it into one bill draft, but that'd be your call as far as how you want to handle the procedural part of it. If you want to let them speak first and then vote, make motions and vote, or?
Well, committee, these are, I mean, well, the last one is, like I said, cleanup, but these first three are all very self-explanatory, so I think we'll take testimony from anybody in the audience on those three. You can speak to one or all three or whatever your choice is, so at this time we'll be glad to take testimony from anyone. If there's any comments, or Mr. King?
Chairman Weiss, members of the committee, Dr. Feldner could not be here today. She asked me at this point to just voice her support of each of these and her approval. So I would take questions if there are specific ones.
Okay.
Or I'll sit down.
Any questions for Representative Mock?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so, Mr. King, if I'm looking, you said Ms. Feldner and the university, the chief information officer for the university system supports 207, 208, and 209. Is that correct?
Correct.
But the university system chancellor does not recommend 208, 209, or 207, is that correct?
I would not have any information on that.
Okay, so we have the letter from...
I replied to what Dr. Feldner asked me to say, so...
Okay. So it's, I mean, the conflicting messages that we're getting from the university system, small cause for concern, but a cause nonetheless. Can you speak to the retention policy? I mean, I know in the letter that that was addressed from Dr. Scogan that the State Board of Higher Education is considering a policy related to record retention and electronic mail services for all 11 institutions, and that's, if approved, it would be adopted on November 20th. Can you speak to what that policy may include or entail?
I can't, not to any level of detail, other than that's exactly what I understand about that situation, too.
Okay. Perhaps, Mr. Chairman, Representative Striley, would you have any information regarding the retention policy? I know this bill draft is slated for 5 years and does not delineate between types of email records, general correspondence, administrative, financial, et cetera. Can you speak to the 5 years and how that would either support or conflict with the proposed policy by the university system?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mock, I have no idea what they're going to propose. They told us last year that they were working on it and going to have something soon, Mr. Sogsby, and there's nothing. It's because this is on the agenda, that's why it's on the agenda. I don't trust what they're going to do, and I think it needs to be a legislative prerogative because they clearly don't have the ability to do it themselves. And as far as the five-year deal, for example, in our business, we have 10 years worth of every single email, every spam email that's archived. I can pull it up right now on my computer on a cloud-based product. That's what I think should be statewide, period. This says 5 years, but if we truly want an open system, why are we allowing employees to choose what's archived and what's not? It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. So I think every single email, spam, I don't care what it is, should be archivable and searchable for 5 years.
Mike, I have a question for you on the state, for the remainder of the state, if you want to address that.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the way our policy works today is records are determined, their retention is determined based on the type of record it is, similar to what Representative Mock, I think, was referring to. And so the thought process behind retention isn't whether it's in paper format or electronic format. You should look at the record. I would tell you that many state employees probably aren't thinking of that stuff when they're deleting email. And I can't speak on behalf of all. I can only speak on my own habits. And so the fact that you would keep them for a period of time makes some sense to me. The risk you run is if it had a three-year retention period, that email or that record, and you kept it for five and there was some legitimate lawsuit that pursued, then you could have 2 years worth of records there that you wouldn't have had to have there. But I think having a set number of years for records retention makes it very easy to clean it up. And I think that's something we all struggle with in state government. So I don't know if that helped, but that's probably what's happening on the state government side. I think most people are trying very hard to look at their retention schedules and follow them.
Okay. Representative Striley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just kind of follow up on that, on where an employee can decide what's basically open to records requests and what's not based on their deletion of them. To me, that just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And like I said, it's obviously there's some costs there. I mean, it's clear. I don't have a number for you. I can tell you we have 60 accounts and it costs us $1,500 a year for 10 years. So, I mean, obviously it's going to be probably hundreds of thousands if you're going to archive that type of information, but I just think it's transparency in government, openness in government. We had the 40-some thousand emails that were deleted out of NDSU, which was a violation of the open records request. Obviously, it was undeterminable whether or not it was intentional or not, but yet it's still, if this was in place, we wouldn't have to worry about that kind of stuff.
Is there anyone else wish to testify on these bill drafts? Pretty quiet. Okay, committee. Discussion. So we'll take these three kind of as a unit, and then, you know, if somebody wants to split them off, and then we'll look at that last one, being that it's more of a cleanup.
Mr. Chairman, and then maybe I've got a question for Mike as well, and I'd like to elaborate a little bit, because, and Representative Straley, your 209 version, the email retention policy, that is specific to the university system, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mock, correct.
Okay. And Mike, is there any statute or policy related to any other state government agencies or bodies for email retention policies?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mock, the way we interpret the current statute, we believe all these entities should follow the retention schedules that the group has put into place. So we believe it's all inclusive.
Okay. And can you elaborate what that policy is? Forgive me for not. Is there a set number of years in that existing policy?
I'm sorry, Representative Mock. So the way the policy works is it's based on the retention schedule. So the retention schedules are set based on three groups reviewing them. It's the agency determining the retention of that record. It's the Attorney General's office. And then third, I believe it's the State Auditor's office. And so the longest of those three is what ends up being on the retention schedule. And offhand, I couldn't tell you, based on the types of records, how long those are, but we have a very detailed list of those.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Straley, and I'm actually fully supportive of this. I'm looking at the number and the logistics. My concern is creating a double standard for one set of one public institution relative to another. I'd like to have it as simple and universal as possible. I would really like to ensure that we're doing our due diligence to have a consistent policy related to open records and email and electronic communication retention that isn't just applicable to one agency or one institution, but instead can be applied to all state government.
Mike, you indicated it's based on records and then other various between the agencies. Does that cause confusion then? With those that have to deal with it, do I have to retain this or not? Do I have to get out my 30-page little book and see which record is?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, absolutely. And I can only speak for myself. Email, paper records, for whatever reason, they're easier to think that there's a retention period for those. Email, it's you want to clean up your email box, and so you have that. You may have similar examples, but I want to delete them. And so that would be in violation of the retention policy. What I do like about picking a standard number of years is it makes it very easy for people to manage and therefore comply to the policy. So,
okay. Representative Straley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And how I envision this would work is these records wouldn't be stored in their Outlook. You'd delete them, but yet they'd still be there. So they could delete every single email, but yet they're still accessible through a search. That's how it can easily be done. It's not a hard deal. So, they can delete every single email every day, but they're still there for 5 years should someone want to do an open records request or if it come up in litigation or whatnot. In the 5 years, it could be 3 years, it could be 7 years. I don't really care what that number is. 5 years it seems reasonable to me. 3 would be acceptable too. There needs to be a time period there, just a hardened time period. And after 3 or 5 years, they can set it to auto-purge everything after 5 years. I don't care. I just think there should be a set number there. They don't have to determine what's archivable or not. It's there.
Further, Rep. Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as I read this, this relates only to public business. So general correspondence or spam or any other electronic message that could be deemed. I guess the question is how do we define public business? what does that include, and what does, and more importantly, what does that exclude? And I think to the forensics of some of these data breaches, knowing what email it was that caused this, if we don't have a retention policy that maybe on the short term includes spam or general correspondence that we could use for investigations and other forensics in the event that there was a data breach and it could be traced to one message. Representative Straley, your intention of public business, and perhaps Mike, if you can speak to what we can do to tighten that up.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mock, I'd just say all email, period. Public business, I guess I'm not 100% sure why that was just public business in there, but my intention was everything.
So fantasy football email sent between employees would be retained for 5 years?
Everything.
Okay.
It's just easier that way. Then there's no decision-making process. It's just automatically archived. Whereas if you got to decide, then you still created this. You're still in the same exact situation as having to determine what's open record, what's public business, and what's not. And let's just archive it all. And it's not going to be that expensive to do. And it just makes sense to me.
If I may,
go ahead,
Mike. Any chance you would have, if it were all email, and if it were the university system, 5 years. The space requirement for that in our servers and our data center, would you have any ballpark number of whether we could hold that now, or what kind of expansion we would need to accommodate that request?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mock, today the university system does use Microsoft Office 365, and I believe they allocate 1 gigabyte of data per individual. And to the best of my knowledge, and I'd be looking for experts, I think that's a lot of data. I don't know if 5 years worth of email would consume 1 gigabyte of data, but it would take somebody to analyze that. My point is, I don't believe the cost would be substantial.
Darren, you want to address that?
I agree with Mike. It's a hard number to put your hands on. It's a lot. I mean, because it's a cloud service, I think we would look at what the different options were. Would we want this located in a local data center, or would it be a cloud service? I think Representative Straley mentioned that theirs is a cloud-type service. So there's multiple options there, but it's a lot of data.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, and I'd agree. It would be, I mean, it's a pile of data. There's no question about it. But when you compress it, well, it depends on the service you use. It wouldn't be as much of a number when you archive it and compress it.
Okay. Further discussion? Okay. Senator Miller?
We move these bills, our intention would be to combine them all into one, right? Just for simplicity's sake. So it introduced as one bill versus three separate bills?
Can we do that and vote on it?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it seems like, you know, they're all related. That would be the proper way to move forward, because we have to redo them as a committee bill draft anyway. To put them all in one would make sense.
So I think that would be, you know, granted, whatever we send out of here will get plenty of debate come session if we move these forward. So Representative Mock, you had a...
Yeah, thank you. And Representative Straley, would you have any objection to us, whether it's today or during the legislative process in a couple of months, expanding this so that that policy relates to all state government?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mock, no. Okay. That'd be just fine with me.
Okay.
Mike?
As of today, I don't have any opposition.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, just to elaborate a little bit more, I think it's important that we have this bill out there now versus waiting for somebody else to just introduce it. You know, now everyone can look at it and think about it.
Okay. Representative Straley, being they are your draft, you want to make a motion to combine them, and do you want to change 209, eliminate public business? And do you want to leave the 5 years in there or change it to three?
Whatever the committee desires, but yeah, I would like to see it all messages, and if three is more appropriate, I'm fine with three or five.
Committee, are you more comfortable with five or three? Does it matter? Okay. So the motion would be, you'll have to make the motion, Representative Straley, take the three as one and eliminate public business. would be relating to, it would just be all electronic mail messages for at least 5 years after the creation or receipt of the message, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'd make a motion that we approve all three bills and remove the relating to public business, so it includes all records in and out.
Okay, we have a motion. We have a second. Any further discussion? Committee understands we're taking these 207, 208, and 209 as one. Representative Mock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually just have a quick question. Does this apply to students as well?
No, that wouldn't be my intention.
So it would only apply to faculty and staff?
Yes.
And those employed by the university system? So is there any, there is no FERPA restrictions or other accommodations we'd have to consider?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mock, not that I'm aware of, not that I can think of. You know, they're, if they save them now, they're there, you know, the ones they choose to save. So I wouldn't think so.
Okay. Okay. Any further questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, I guess we'll call the roll.
Chairman Weiss?
Yes.
Representatives Mock?
Yes.
Owens?
Yes.
Striley?
Yes.
Tolman?
Yes.
Senators Burkhardt?
Yes.
Marsolet?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Okay, committee. We have one bill draft left, that's 256, which I think is a good idea because the original law, I mean, we've had a lot of changes in how things are going now. We have a CIO at for IT. Is there anybody in the audience who'd like to comment on 256? Okay. It's quiet. Representative Striley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move to approve on that as well.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second
from Representative Mock. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, we'll call the roll.
Chairman Weiss?
Yes.
Representatives Mock?
Yes.
Owens?
Yes.
Striley?
Yes.
Tolman?
Yes.
Senators Burkhardt?
Yes.
Marsolet?
Yes.
Miller?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, the motion passes.
Okay, committee. That basically concludes our agenda. As you guys are aware, this is a statutory committee, so if something comes up, we obviously can meet during session or prior to. I don't anticipate that, but we did last session. So is there anything else for the good of the order?
Mr. Chairman, we should have one more motion that that you and the staff prepare the report for the to present to legislative management.
Oh.
And that can just be a voice vote.
That can be a voice vote? Okay, yeah, I forgot about that. Okay. So we need a motion to... how the motion have to be worded?
Let the chairman and staff prepare the report for presentation to legislative management.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Owens.
I make a motion that the legislative staff and the chairman prepare a motion for the legislative staff.
Okay. We have a second.
Second.
I think you kind of butchered that.
Yeah.
You got the point.
What I wanted to say was so moved.
We have a motion and a second by Senator Marseille. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? Motion's carried. Okay. Anything else that this committee wants to bring forward? Again, you know, we aren't dissolving like the other committees, so if something comes up, if anything's important, you can contact me or the LC and we'll... You know, if we need to, we'll schedule a meeting during session or vice versa. So with that, I want to thank everyone for the work. I think we had a good interim. Not everything we heard here was always what we wanted to hear, but, you know, we got a lot of information, and hopefully going forward, we'll be able to resolve some of those issues come session. So with that, we're adjourned.